Julie Klassen is a fiction editor with a background in advertising. She's worked in Christian publishing for more than 12 years in both marketing and editorial capacities. She's a graduate of the University of Illinois. Her latest book out is called The Silent Governess, and it is up for a Minnesota Book Award in genre fiction. And Julie Klassen joins us now on KEXE from, do you live in St. Paul?
St. Paul, that's right, Heidi.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us today, Julie. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm excited. I'm having a good time being a finalist for the Minnesota Book Awards. I've gotten to meet some of the other finalists, and it's just fun to see all the great writing that's being done right here in Minnesota.
It is, and I was intrigued to see your book in the genre fiction, because I don't always even know what that means, genre fiction. And I looked into your book a little bit more and saw that, you know, is it classified under Christian and also like historical romance?
Right, it would be historical fiction. It is in the bookstores, it's usually in the inspirational category, but it has mystery and romance and all those other elements as well, so it kind of fits in both categories.
This is exactly why it's great that we have something like the Minnesota Book Awards, because it's just something I probably wouldn't have run across before.
And I'm having a really good time, too, meeting some of these new readers like yourself, people who write to me emails saying, oh, how fun to discover you. I live down the road and never knew, you know, because of seeing my name out there. So I'm enjoying getting to meet some new readers as well.
Well, I assume, like, the other books that are up for the award consider genre fiction. People, once they like a certain type of book, they're very, very loyal.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm relatively new compared to the other finalists in the category. I have three books out now. And I met two of the other finalists, and they both write crime drama set, I think, both in St. Paul. And I did not get to meet John Sanford, but obviously he's a big New York Times bestselling author who's also writing kind of that thriller type thing. So I'm sure they have their fans who just love reading that type of thing. And I do hear mostly from women, though a few men are brave enough to admit that they like my books that are, you know, a little bit more, I call them kind of the Jane Austen era, that kind of historical, but with romance and some mystery as well. So I do have people who wonder why it takes me so long to write a book. I'm only writing one a year at this point, with all the research I have to put into them. So they are waiting anxiously for my next book, and I appreciate that.
Well, the newest one is called The Silent Governess. Tell us about this woman who is the silent governess.
Sure. When we first meet Olivia Keene, she is on the run, and we don't know why for several chapters. But as she's fleeing, she stumbles onto a grand estate and there overhears a secret. And the lord of the manor realizes he can't let her go, because if she were to spread what she heard, he would be ruined. So he gives her a job on his estate so he can keep his eye on her. And as he does, he begins to fall for her, even though he's not sure he can trust her, because Olivia Keene has quite a few secrets of her own that readers will hopefully enjoy finding out more about her along the way.
Where and when is this book set?
This book is set in England in the early 1800s, 1815 or so. I mentioned I call it the Jane Austen era. Other people call it the Regency era of England. So about 1800, 1815 in that time period.
And what draws you to this time period in that place?
Well, I have to admit that it's all Colin Firth's fault. He's an actor that played Mr. Darcy in Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. And I think many authors out writing in this time period would admit that he began a love affair for many of us with this time period, kind of the romance of the ballrooms and the romance of men with long sideburns and tall boots. I don't know what it is, but it's a time period that, at least if you had money, was a romantic time period. And if you didn't have money, not so much, but it's a time period that a lot of readers seem to enjoy. Jane Austen is more popular today than she was 200 years ago, which is inspiring to think that something I might write might have some kind of lasting impact.
There is such a romance to that time.
Well, I think part of it, and again, it had its rough edges too, and in fact, the more I research it, there were a lot of hard things about living then. You know, the romance was one thing, but there were also, you know, medically, you wouldn't want to live back then. Sanitation-wise, no. But in terms of the way the character of people, at least in general, You know, it was a time where, you know, ladies were brought up to be proper ladies and men gentlemen, and in general people tried to live, you know, by the rules of polite society and a high moral code. And I do think, you know, sometimes our culture is just so casual and so slapdash that we do kind of miss that more polite and kind and romantic way of treating one another.
So where Olive is, not Olive, Olivia, she comes into this place and she is given this job, which immediately puts her at a certain level within that household. Can you tell us about those different levels and what they mean? And how, she eventually moves to governess, which puts her at a different place too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed researching the whole inner workings of a big house in this time period of England. The servants, reading some of the guidebooks that were written that told each servant what the etiquette was of their position as well as their duties. And a governess was in a very awkward position because she was not considered a servant, so she could not socialize with the servants, which were the vast number of people in the house. But she was also not considered part of the family, so she really wasn't supposed to socialize with the family either, because in general a governess would normally be from a decent upbringing, but her father wasn't wealthy enough to get her to catch her a good husband, a rich husband. And so really the only way a woman could support herself was either by being a governess or by being a companion to an older woman. So it is a difficult and lonely position to be a governess in that time period. So it was interesting for me to read some of the journals of real-life governesses of that day, some who really enjoyed it and some who found it just a bleak, lonely existence. Of course, in my book, she's going to have plenty of interaction with not only a few possible gentleman suitors, but a couple of darling kids as well.
You know, you mentioned earlier about a high moral code, and I think that's one of the things that drew me to this character you've created of Olivia, because It is a lonely position where she's at, and it's not explicit how she's living her life. She just seems to know what she's supposed to do in her life.
I'm not sure if I've thought about that specifically, but certainly a big impact on her life was her mother, which that's another mystery in the book. We're not quite sure what has happened to her mother and whether she is dead or whether Olivia will find her again. And certainly she has been raised by her mother to be a lady, even though her father is not a gentleman, so she's kind of been brought up in this troubled marriage where she's got both forces pulling at her, and she never really fit into her small village because she was more educated. Educated women were not popular back then. They were called blue stockings, and they were made fun of. But Olivia's mom had big influence on her. Of course, in that time period, going to church, having a religious, moral life was just expected. I mean, Jane Austen herself was a clergyman's daughter, and that's just a big part of most people's lives back then. And certainly it was a part of Olivia's as well. Now, she's not sure after some of the mistakes she's made how her ending of her life will be, but she's certainly trying to hold on to what she's learned growing up and to somehow make her way through life.
That's Julie Klassen. We're talking with her about her book called The Silent Governess that's nominated for a Minnesota Book Award. Tell us how it comes to be that she is silent, and because she can't speak, what do people think of her?
You know, that's a good question. I have to admit, when my editors saw my book proposal for a silent governess, they were very worried that would have no dialogue in it. I said, don't worry, she's not really physically silent for that long. The silence has several different meanings in the book. She is silent about her own past. She keeps her past very hidden for a long time, which both intrigues the hero of the story and exasperates him as well. And then she is physically injured for a time when she is caught trespassing on his estate, and she is injured. And so for a time she physically can't speak. She does get her voice back, but because the Lord is so determined that she not spread his secret, he compels her not to be talking to any of the other servants or be talking to any of the family. And considering she's stuck up on the top floor in the nursery of this house, that isn't as hard to accomplish as it might sound. So she's able to speak with him for a time period before she's able to speak to other people. But she continues her silence in that she keeps his secret and does not divulge that to anyone.
Was it a surprise to people how she spoke once she did actually speak again, or what did they think?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, Heidi. I think people assumed, because of the state she was found in, she'd been kind of injured and had looked pretty bedraggled, and her clothes had been pretty untidy and torn when she was found. So I think people did assume that she was, you know, perhaps a lower class person, perhaps not educated. She doesn't start out as a governess, as you mentioned. She starts out more of a servant role. So the household is very surprised when she starts speaking. She is a very educated, well-spoken young woman, which begins to raise all kinds of questions about how did she come to be running away? Where did she come from? Who is she? Why was she eavesdropping on my estate? What is her background? That type of thing. So there is a lot of mystery to that and surprise when she's discovered to be perhaps not who they thought she was.
You mentioned her clothes, and as I was reading this book, I was thinking, you must have fun with the research aspect of it, because the food is different. You can't suddenly insert a Diet Pepsi within this novel.
Exactly. That is a challenge, Heidi. I tell you, sitting here in Minnesota in 2010, trying to write about the life, the customs, the clothes, the food, more than 200 years ago, I have to check everything. Did they use this word? Did they have this item, whatever it is, this invention or even this food item back then? So yes, I have a stack of musty books that I'm always referring to about the fashion, the clothes that were worn, the different styles. I have a fun old cookbook from the 1800s that I like to pull recipes from so I can get some of those words. I like to pull as many of the types of words that were used back then. You can read Jane Austen's letters online, so I always check to make sure it's a word that was in use at the time. So there's a lot of work that goes into it, but that part is fun, trying to get the flavor of the time period through the clothes, through the food, through the words that were used. So thanks for noticing that.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, and Olivia on the cover is wearing this beautiful sort of cape. Do you wear something, a time period sort of thing, as you're writing?
I don't. You know, it's funny. I think publisher does an awesome job on those covers. And they actually, the dress on the cover, which you can't see there very well under the cape, they actually rented from Hollywood, I believe. They either get them from the Guthrie has costumes that they rent from their former productions, or if they can't find something at the Guthrie, then they have to get them from some places in California that rent out their old movie costumes and things. But the actual cape belongs to a woman I work with who lent it to the designer, who just happened to have that cape, which I think is funny. But I don't personally own that. I own something in that style, but I think it looks wonderful.
So where do the ideas for these books come from for you?
You know, lots of different places for ideas. In this particular book, I was, oddly enough, driving through Iowa listening to classical music. I'd like to say I listen to classical music all the time, but I don't. I should listen more. But for some reason that day, as I was driving and listening to, I think it was Mahler's Third Symphony, I started seeing just whole like movie scenes in my mind that are still kind of the soundtrack to the first few chapters of this book, when Olivia's on the run, going through the dark woods and being pursued and all of that. Then, of course, being a lover of all things English, something that really struck me as an early age was reading Jane Eyre, which my sixth grade teacher actually read out loud to us. And she read it with real emotions and mascara tears running down her face. Obviously, that book and that teacher made a big impact on me. So that's obviously been stored away in the back of my head, and it's been fun to kind of pull that out and to have written my own governess story now. So different places for the ideas. I find the ideas are easier than actually writing the things, but that's the fun part.
What is your writing process like? Is it fun for you? Do you have it a certain schedule so that you do make sure you get the work done?
No, I should have a schedule, and I should be a lot more organized, but I haven't gotten to that point yet. I still have kids and a family and a day job, so it is a lot of late nights and weekends as I fit it in. I do have to put together a fairly detailed synopsis for the publisher. So I do in general know what the book is going to be about when I start out. But then in terms of the actual process, there's a lot of time brainstorming. I find my best ideas when I'm going on car rides, as I mentioned, or long walks or something about motion that seems to spur my creativity. And then I spent a lot of time trying to come up with interesting and different characters, working on the characters so that they don't all sound and think like me. So I spent some time coming up with the characters, and then lots of time trying to create plots that are complex, that have twists and turns. I like to keep readers guessing if at all possible. So it's not a set process, and there's lots of revisions and editing that goes into it until it gets to be the final product. But that's probably why it takes me, 8 months or something from start to finish. I'll have to come up with a better process, write a little more quickly.
You can find more information on Julie at her website. It's Julie Klassen, KLASSEN.com. The book is called The Silent Governess. Julie, thanks so much. It was great talking with you today.
Thank you, Heidi.